What about 1950? What are the prospects for business and labor and farmers and consumers? How does it look for 50? That is the question. This is America United, the informal roundtable program heard on the NBC network each week at this time. The transcribed program where business, labor, and agriculture openly discuss their differences, united in the belief they should be openly discussed. Host today is the National Grange, represented here by J.T. Sanders. Our other guests, O.V. Wells of the Department of Agriculture, Emerson P. Schmidt of the Chamber of Commerce of the United States, and Everett Casalo of the Congress of Industrial Organizations. Our moderator is David Brinkley, NBC Washington commentator. Mr. Brinkley.
On this, the last broadcast of America United in 1949, we're going to take a look ahead at 1950 and at what it offers, what it promises, threatens, and how it looks. We're going to look at the outlook for business, for labor, for farmers and consumers. Today, on this program, we will hear the appraisals of four Washington observers representing business, labor, and agriculture. Each will tell us first how it looks to him for 1950 and why, and then we will have some exchanges of opinions. And maybe a year from now, we can come back and see how they turned out. First of all, I'm going to call on Mr. Wells of the Department of Agriculture to tell us how it looks to him for 1950. Mr. Wells?
Well, if I had to sum up the outlook for 1950 in one word, I would say I expect next year to be about normal. That means we don't think it's either going to be too good or too bad.
Well, thank you very much. Now, Mr. Schmidt of the Chamber of Commerce of the United States.
I don't know just what normal means, but my general size-up is that 1950 will probably be not quite as good as 1949 and certainly not as good as 1948, but it'll still be a pretty good year for workers, for the consumer, and for business.
Now, Mr. Casalo of the Congress of Industrial Organizations.
Mr. Brinkley, I would agree generally that the outlook for 1950 is not quite as good as it has been in 1949, if one could say 1949 was a good year. I would add that I think you've got to try to judge this thing on sort of a sweep basis. We began to get unemployment problems in this year, and we have the feeling that they'll be somewhat more acute in 1950. That does not mean one should look or expect a major depression or economic collapse. But the outlook is for levels somewhat down from 1949.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Sanders of the National Grange.
Well, Mr. Brinkley, I would agree with Mr. Wells over here pretty well. So far as business, so far as wage income is concerned, and so far as industrial income and production is concerned. But I do believe that the present trend in agriculture is of great significance and has some danger in it if it is not arrested. We already have an income that is somewhere down from 25 to 30%, or that is, we will have undoubtedly 25 to 30% lower than the peak income of agriculture. And I think this trend can do very serious damage, because it doesn't take very much of the for income of agriculture to drop if costs remain high to seriously affect the net income of agriculture.
Well, thank you, Mr. Sanders. Maybe a good place to start in a concrete discussion of what we expect to see in 1950 would be with income, consumer income or national income. What do we think about that? Is it going to continue as high as it has been, or will it be lower, or what will it be? Who has an opinion on that?
Well, we've been trying to look that over in our shop, and I think the best way you can judge income is to see what kinds of spending you can look for in 1950. I think that it's quite probable that business expenditures, that is, investment in new plant and equipment, will be at a pretty high level, somewhat down from 1948 and 1949 both. Foreign spending on the foreign relief program plus the European defense program may be a little bit higher than we've had this past year. Now, those are two important elements. So far as consumer income is concerned, we're a little bit worried about that. I think that if you get some increase in unemployment, as we think is just possible, even though it may not be a gigantic increase, you're going to get some falling off in consumer income, which would reduce spending a little bit further. And then you have the farm income problem, where you can look for further moderate drops, perhaps a little bit more than moderate, from 1948 levels. So you're getting a sort of a drifting downward of the spending stream in the country. I think that one element that may hold up things to some extent is the fact that the government will probably be spending somewhat more this year than in 1950 than it did in 1949, because it is committed to certain programs, and that will be, in a sense, a propping element in the economy.
Well, does that mean you think we have seen the end or about the end of the inflation we've been experiencing?
Well, that's a difficult thing to say. Obviously, we haven't seen the end of it in some respects. The action of the U.S. Steel Corporation in raising steel prices will undoubtedly kick some prices up. Of course, you reach some point where even big steel companies can begin to price themselves, or at least some of the steel fabricators who depend on that basic raw material, out of the market. So I would say that in the first off, you're probably going to get an inflationary push in some lines. But whether the overall effect will be to just generally depress the economy in the long run, and even in the latter part of 1950, it's hard to say.
Well, Dr. Schmidt of the Chamber of Commerce, how do you feel about that?
Well, I don't disagree with the general forecast of perhaps a little softening in the income stream. One thing that is on the favorable side, I think, is the rise in productivity per man hour that is apparently beginning to take place. The increase in output per man hour has been terribly disappointing to nearly everybody who's looked at the figures. Instead of the 2.5% or 2.75% per year that we had before the World War, the Second World War, we now, in the last few years, have had something in the order of about 1%, perhaps, or 1.25%. But perhaps this year, and probably next year, the productivity per man hour will rise. And that should mean that, at least in some sectors of the economy, there would be possibility of competition bringing down some prices and help to maintain markets. And I haven't studied closely the steel situation, but the steel people, of course, are confronted with rising costs in terms of higher freights, and John L. Lewis has already announced that his demands are going to mean a rise in price of coal. So, plus the pensions that Phil Murray put over, and all these factors have to be taken into consideration. So, whether the steel people are gouging the public or not, I think is a question that needs looking into. I'm not at all certain that that is a correct observation.
Mr. Sanders,
before we get into the controversy of this thing, I would like to call attention to another item on the income that I noticed Mr. Schmidt didn't indicate. The soldier bonus, or the insurance payment, is likely to be quite a stimulant of around $2 to $3 billion, which would add materially to our spending power next year, tend to add to it at least. Now, whether it offset some of the downward things or not, I don't know.
I'm not sure, Mr. Sanders, whether you're right on that. Isn't that simply a transfer payment rather than an additional payment? It depends on how it's financed, but you and I have got to pay the taxes for paying this, and isn't that simply a transfer of income rather than a net addition to income?
Well, those taxes are likely to come later. They're not likely to come this year, Mr. Smith. That's the important thing. I do think, however, that this will have a material effect on our income next year. I noticed that the World Report says that our personal income would rise from 212 to about 217. That's their estimate of what the personal income would rise during the coming next year.
I think you can't answer this question, Mr. Sanders, until you make up your mind whether the general inflationary forces are behind us or are still somewhat ahead of us. And close students of this problem are not at all sure, but what the another inflationary surge is sort of around the corner. We've had a tremendous expansion of installment credit. The money supply is again being enlarged, and as Mr. Caslow pointed out, there's likely to be a budgetary deficit And if that's financed by the creation of bank money, it's quite conceivable that the inflationary pressure will be restored, incomes will rise, and so long as the free ride lasts, it's all very pleasant, but the day of reckoning, of course, will come.
Before we get to you in a minute, Mr. Castle, before we get away from the question of income in 1950, I'd like to hear from Mr. Wells. He represents, of course, the Department of Agriculture. How does it look to you, the prospects for the farmers' income in 1950?
Yes, well, I think it's about time I define this normal I talked about anyway. And let me start, though, with business, because the general consumer income level of the United States is especially important to farmers. We believe that the current high income levels will continue at least through the first half of 1950, partly due to this bonus payment that they have been talking about. We are by no means certain that the last half of 1950 will not show some declines in consumer income. As far as farm price and income are concerned, farm prices have been drifting downward. It looks as if there might be some more downward drift before they're actually halted. Net farm operators' income this year is about 20% under 1947. We believe that net farm income may be as much as a third under 1947 in 1950.
Mr. Casalo, we've cut you off twice now.
I was interested in Dr. Schmidt's comments on the prospect of increases in productivity. In fact, he said they have been occurring. And
we think they are. We're getting many
reports, and I guess you people have, of actual increases. And it's for that reason that we've been especially disturbed by this steel price increase coming at this time, because you are getting a general realignment of prices. Most of them are going down. It seemed as though we were in for a kind of period of stability along the price front, with the prospects of some stable adjustments for 1950. And along has come this steel price increase. Now, Mr. Schmidt pointed out that many of the steel companies were confronted by increased costs in materials. Well, it is true in the last month or two their costs have gone up in a number of respects. He mentioned freight rate increases. Well, we have found that the decreases in the basic raw material costs that the steel industry has to face over the past year far offset any slight freight increases. Take steel scrap, one of the basic commodities in making steel. It was $43 a year ago, $43 a ton. Today it's $32. Take such an item as tin, which was $1.03 a year ago and is down to about 79 cents a pound today. And the same goes for zinc and lead and a few other commodities. And the decrease in steel scrap alone would offset the increase in due to the freight costs.
Of course, the Steel Industry Board didn't accept your general analysis.
The Steel Industry Board specifically stated that in rejecting the steel workers' demand for a wage increase, and I can quote it if you wish, I have it right here, that they did not say the steel company wasn't in a good enough financial position, perhaps, to pay an increase. But they said that the consumers should look forward to steel price decreases, not increases. And for that reason, they were rejecting a wage increase. In fact, they said if those decreases were not forthcoming, the steel workers should well have an opportunity to come back and ask for another wage increase.
Of course, it's the function of the market to determine these prices. I don't know why we should try to determine them here over the air. If the steel people are raising prices and the markets resist them, there'll be some readjustment. And every businessman is constantly probing the market. Now, maybe they've made a mistake. They'll discover whether they've made a mistake or not. I don't think that you need to be appalled by the situation. And I think they know their business pretty well.
Well, isn't it interesting that every time a major labor union comes in with a major economic demand, we have a public fact-finding discussion, thorough airing of the issue, and here a dozen steel executives sit down and decide that whatever reasons they might have, that we need this $4 a ton steel increase, and its impact on the country is simply staggering.
Well, let's get back, gentlemen, to the prospects for 1950. One term we often hear used nowadays is the term welfare state, and it's charged frequently that we are heading toward a welfare state. I'd like to hear some opinions on the prospects for continuing that trend, if it is a trend, in 1950. Do you think we will go on that way? Who has an opinion on that? Mr. Sanders, I haven't heard from you lately. Do you think we will?
That would be a subject, Mr. Brinkley, that would take us half a year to discuss, it seems to me.
We don't have quite that long.
But I doubt whether there will be any marked trend in that direction. I think that possibly we will likely increase some of our provisions for support of some of our relief factors, but I don't believe there will be a marked trend toward toward what we know as the welfare state in this country. I don't look for any great movement toward.
Don't you think, Mr. Sanders, that
compulsory health or insurance or anything like that?
But don't you think that the Senate at least will expand coverage of old age and survivors insurance, bring you farmers in on it, and your farm labor, as the Chamber of Commerce has recommended for a great many years?
Well, I doubt whether they will.
Well, the House has already done it, 333-14.
Well, we certainly all hope that we see improved old age and survivors
yes,
insurance.
That
I think there's a very good
done.
Chance that
yeah.
we'll get it.
It ought to be done this year, it seems to me.
We had no sooner signed up our agreements with steel and auto than many of the auto executives began to say that this is they discovered that this was, after all, a federal responsibility. All these years they hadn't been unwilling to testify, but now apparently they're coming forward.
I'm not sure that's quite fair. The Chamber of Commerce has testified. I personally have testified on many occasions before the House Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Finance Committee in favor of expanded coverage and improvement of the benefit formula and so on. We think it ought to be done. It should have been done long ago. We testified twice last spring. And business in general has not resisted this idea of expanding coverage and improving the system.
Well, I think it wasn't so many years ago that the chamber was not on record specifically in favor of expansion. It is true, I think, in the last 2 or 3 years.
More than that.
How about some of the other elements involved in what's called the welfare state?
On socialized medicine, I think the probabilities are not very strong. There'll probably be some fringe proposals in the health field that may get fairly good support. I suppose you'd call the Brannan Plan part of the welfare state. What about that, Mr. Sanders? Is that likely to be pushed through and with your help?
Not with our help, of course not. You're quite well aware of that, Mr. Smith, when you ask that. I think that the Brannan Plan its aim is not what I would call a welfare state aim. You probably would disagree with me on that, but I'd rather feel that we get far afield if we discuss very extensively the Brannan Plan in this broadcast.
I agree with you.
I certainly hope we see something like increased federal aid to education passed in the next Congress.
I will agree with you there.
Of the groups around the table is on that. And if that's part of the welfare state, then I must say I'm for it.
Well, we're all for welfare, but there are very many different ways of accomplishing welfare. Hitler offered to unify Europe for us, but we didn't like his methods of unifying Europe. And in a great many of these questions, the method is of first-class importance. It's not enough to have good, noble ambitions and ideals. And
of course, Mr. Smith, there is no even remote resemblance between Hitler's methods and what we're proposing under the federal aid laws.
Don't you think it's pretty important to keep control of education as widely diffused as possible, rather than to have it in the hands of the federal government and whatever party happens to be in power, whether it's a Republican or a socialist or a Democrat or...
You know, it's an interesting thing. We can go on for years and years with all kinds of federal-state action. Oh, we've had land grants to railroads. We've had high tariffs which helped industry. We've had other legislation to help other groups. Now along comes a plan which very strictly reserves the power over education to the states, provides for setting some minimum standards and some minimum floors by means of federal taxation and distribution of income, so that all children will pretty nearly have an equal opportunity to get a good educational start in life. And suddenly we've reached that dangerous point. How about such things as chartering of corporations? Wasn't that part of the welfare state? I mean, that's a kind of state-granted power. That was all right, I suppose, but I don't know. I guess it's a matter of where you draw the line. We certainly don't draw the line against federal aid to education.
Well, this question of degree is very important. It's true in the speed with which you drive your automobile and the use of your drugs. Questions of degree are always really the questions. It's never all black or all white. And
degree, it's a matter of whose interests seem to be at stake.
I would like to say to Mr. Smith that I think everybody that is a proponent of Federal Aid to Education, so far as I know, are perfectly willing to carry the provisions out that was in the Senate bill of in every way possible excluding federal control. And it can be done, we believe, and we do not believe that that should be raised as an issue against federal aid anymore.
Well, here's another political question I'd like to inject here. It's somewhat political. One of the chief complaints we hear nowadays is high taxes, and they certainly are high. I think we'll all agree on that. Does anybody expect to see any change upward or downward in 1950?
Let's let Mr. Smith talk on that.
An opinion on that.
Well, for some unknown reason, Mr. Truman and other high administration people have just in the last few days said something in sympathy with the repeal of the wartime excise taxes. And I think they ought to be repealed because they're obviously a carryover from the war period, and I don't know why we ought to pick out cameras and various other things and penalize them. If we have to have more revenue, it would be much more sensible to have a more general type of excise tax rather than to pick out particular commodities.
Especially transportation, Mr. Smith.
Yes, transportation. Of course, last year, Mr. Truman did recommend that repeal, 3% on freight, I think it is.
Well, we probably all agreed that the repeal of the wartime excise tax has a lot of justice. I certainly would be fearful, Dr. Schmidt, though, of general excise tax, if by that you mean some kind of a general sales tax, because the worst feature of the excise tax at the present time is its regressive nature and the way it cramps consumption for many people. And the general excise tax would just be the worst kind of substitute
for
it.
Well, I wish we had time, Mr. Kessler, to go into that problem, because we're going to face that issue of regressive taxes from now on. In England, Sir Stafford Cripps, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, has told the British people that from now on, any increase in public service that you people want must be paid for by yourselves. Now, we're pretty close to that, so that whether you decide to raise the corporation tax or the personal income tax or excise tax, it's going to come out of the people, because the great bulk of the income, 80-90% of all the income, is earned by people under $5,000 now. So there's really very little to pick in the aggregate, in the upper income groups. So from now on, if we want more government service, it'll largely mean that the government will take the money from us as ordinary wage workers and citizens, and it'll hand us back some services.
Mr. Wells, have you something to say here?
Well, I think this is the most interesting discussion. Now, again, coming back to this word normal, this is an extremely complicated world. I don't really know what a welfare state is, Mr. Chairman. I think we rather hope more farmers will have electricity and telephones next year. We'd like to see better educational facilities someplace. But I do think there are going to be more than enough problems next year facing all of us, and certainly on this farm program front, which you touched on very briefly. Farmers in a number of areas are faced with acreage allotments this next year, marketing quotas in some cases. And I think even Mr. Sanders and I could agree that farmers and their representatives are going to have a major concern as to how farm programs can best operate during the coming year.
I think, Mr. Wells, that is important for us to explore further. I think the present horizon is concerned, the farm situation is probably one of the most critical and could do the most damage of any part of our present economic structure. If farm income continues to fall, and especially if the cost of operations, which are sure to stick, continue to stay high, it will markedly affect the prosperity and the purchasing power of the farmer.
Can I throw out one other problem we haven't touched on that's been bothering us a good deal, and that's this problem of unemployment. Naturally, it's nothing like it was in the 30s. This year, at its peak, it was about, I guess, almost 4 million people unemployed. We think that as the seasonal trends wear down, it's apt to get back to that again in next spring. And then you've got the addition of maybe another 500,000 or 600,000 people into the labor force. And what we're concerned about is that so much of this unemployment seems to be concentrating in particular areas. Now, you know, they picked out some 30 or 35 critical labor market areas a few months ago. And our investigations indicate to us that these areas are still in a very critical condition. And we have been proposing that some agency or some office be established to look into it and just see what can be done about this problem. because you have people who've exhausted their unemployment compensation benefits, and many more who are going to do so, and they pose a very real social and, I think, an economic problem for the country.
Several of those distressed communities have been taken off the distressed list, and I think the real solution to that those distressed area problems is general prosperity. And if we can avoid rocking the boat and have a good year in 1950, I think those communities will make some adaptation.
Many of them have been on a year or more now, and according to some of the most recent reports, I guess they're just in the process of publishing them, there's just been not much improvement in the situation in most of them, and some of them are worse. I think the number is about the same. A few have fluctuated.
What about the export-import situation? British devaluation has not had the favorable effect on British selling that was anticipated. Isn't that correct? And that means the British are not getting out of their trouble. They're building up some reserves, to be sure, very modestly. But devaluation has not had the upsurge effect that was anticipated. And it looks as though our own export-imports may be about in balance for 1950, whereas we've had a big gap. And does that have a direct bearing on agriculture? Is that part of the surplus problem that you see, Mr. Sanders, or Mr. Wells?
If the balance is struck, Mr. Smith, without balancing the situation by reducing of our exports only, that is, if imports can be increased and our exports can be at least maintained fairly high, I think that would be a very healthy situation if we could get them in balance. The present situation, of course, is very bad indeed and can't persist. I'd like to come back. I don't want to switch from that subject, but there is one point you raised a while ago, Mr. Smith, that I want to raise. You mentioned the fact that if the steel price is too high, that people will not demand the steel, and therefore there'll be an adjustment in the steel price. Now, that would be all well and good if the adjustment was made that way, but we agriculturalists think that the adjustment is made in output rather than price, mostly.
Well, it'll have to be quick, Dr. Smith.
There are a lot of substitutes for steel, a growing number of substitutes, so I'm confident the steel executives are going to be very sensitive to their own market, and I'm hoping that they will keep analyzing their market, and if they've overpriced, that they will make a correction.
I'm sorry I have to interrupt. There's a great deal more to hear about the steel price increase. Maybe we can talk about that another day, but our time is up now, and I want to summarize very briefly before we go. On the question, what are the prospects for 1950, Mr. Wells of the Agriculture Department says he thinks that it will be about normal, not too good or too bad. Dr. Schmidt of the Chamber of Commerce says it probably will not be as good as 49 or 48, but he thinks generally it'll be a pretty good year for business, farmers, and consumers. And Mr. Casselow of the CIO says it'll be not quite so good as 1949. There was some unemployment, and there may be somewhat more, but generally probably a pretty good year. And Mr. Sanders of the Grange agrees with Mr. Wells so far as business is concerned, but he says the present downward trend in agricultural prices is dangerous if not arrested. Our thanks to all four of you. Now, here is our announcer.
This has been America United discussing today the question, how does it look for 50? This roundtable program is heard on the NBC network each week at this time. Printed copies of today's program may be had without cost by writing to the National Grange, Washington 6, D.C., Speaking today were O.V. Wells of the United States Department of Agriculture, Everett Casselow of the Congress of Industrial Organizations, Emerson P. Schmidt of the Chamber of Commerce of the United States, and J.T. Sanders, speaking for our host, the National Grange. Our moderator was David Brinkley, NBC Washington commentator. This program was transcribed and was brought to you by the NBC Network and its independent affiliated stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.